Welcome to ADHD Gathering, a podcast highlighting diverse narratives within the ADHD community and amplifying strength from real ADHD folks. I'm your host, Ying, also known as ADHD Asian Girl across all social media. Let's tune in to today's show. Welcome to the podcast, Sydney. I'm so glad you're here. I first met Sydney through Twitter, through the awesome ADHD Twitter space. And she is one of the big creators on their handle, What the ADHD, and I quickly fall in love with her like quirky personality and her way of communicating science into regular words. And she has awesome YouTube channel as well. So Sydney, thank you so much for being on the podcast. Could you say a word or two to introduce yourself?
Yeah. Hey, thanks for having me on. I was really excited when you said you were doing a podcast. So this is really awesome. I'm excited. So a little about me. I'm Sydney. I'm in my 30s. I'm a mom. And I have ADHD. I've just been really trying to create a space online for ADHD communities to learn about themselves. My main goal has always been to help other people feel less alone. I remember feeling like I was so alone before and I was so different. I don't want people to feel like that. I want them to be like, hey, there's other people out there like me. This is why my brain's doing that thing. Just like accessible education is really big for me. So that's my main goal with everything that I do. And I'm also really sarcastic. So I throw in some humor when I can too. But yeah, that's my approach, I guess.
Yes. I love the idea you talked about, the accessible education. That's definitely something I picked up from you. I noticed you're probably the first person that planted the idea when I refer to my brain. I would say like my ADHD brain does this and it gives a healthy level of separation between me and my ADHD brain and understanding myself that way. But first, tell me more about how you felt before your diagnosis. You said you felt very alone, same here, and you felt different. So how did you first notice that you could have ADHD and what was your diagnosis journey look like?
So as a kid, I always felt different. And a lot of that, unfortunately, came from the adults in my life. They would draw attention to these behaviors and my habits and things. So, for example, I was that kid with the messy room and the messy desk and like papers crumpled up in my backpack and I forget my homework. And my mom was very much a neat freak. And she would respond to my messes by yelling at me and punishing me. And at school, I would pull my card a lot. And for those that don't know, pulling your card, like it starts with a green card. And then if you get a warning, you have to pull the green card and then it's a yellow card. And then if you pull the yellow card, it's an orange. And then there's red and then black. And if it's black, you have to go to the principal's office. I never got to black, but I was always that kid that was like, Sydney, go pull your card. You didn't turn in your assignments. Sydney, go pull your card. You're talking when you're supposed to be paying attention. I wasn't that intuitive at 7, 8 years old, but I noticed that other kids weren't getting in trouble. But I also thought at the same time, at home, maybe other kids do get yelled at that much by their parents. Maybe they do get criticized a lot by their parents. That kind of just continued on through childhood. And it was also really hard when I was a teenager. And finally, I became an adult, dropped out of college the first time I went to college. Got married and still undiagnosed at this point, had a child, still undiagnosed at this point. And then it all came crashing down when I had a panic attack when I was studying for cell and molecular biology exam the semester before I graduated with my bachelor's. I just remember I was sitting there studying for it. I just started breathing really fast and I started crying, even though I didn't feel sad. I was so confused. I'm like, what is going on with me right now? So I took my exam first and then I scheduled my appointment. And I was actually really lucky. I've heard a lot of people, it takes them forever to get in. And I wasn't even necessarily looking for an ADHD diagnosis either. I've become very acquainted with Google and WebMD, but I was trying to look things up. What is this? Anxiety came up. He came up with some things and I was reading about it. And I'm like, wow, I have a lot of this, but that's not my main problem right now. And then that's pretty much exactly what the psychologist said when I went in for my appointment. I was about 25 years old, I think, at the time. And he was like, you have severe anxiety. And I'm like, I would probably agree with that. So he started me on antidepressants and that was that first appointment. I came back, I think, a couple weeks later so he could check how the medication was treating me, and I actually had noticed some difference. I told him that the panic attacks were actually a little more manageable. I felt a little more comfortable in public and crowds, but the issue of the focus was still there, like it always has been, because I wasn't trying to play dumb when I was in here, but I also didn't want to go in and say, hey, I have this thing, diagnose me with this thing. So I was just explaining what I've been dealing with, generally the focus stuff, but also I was unorganized as a child and I still am today. I procrastinate a lot. I'm very impulsive. I talked a lot when I was a kid. I still do as an adult, like overshare. And the thing is, I don't know if I've mentioned this on Twitter before. But the psychologist that I went to actually didn't believe in ADHD. When I was explaining all of this to him, he was like, sounds like you want to be diagnosed with ADHD. And I think, like, I just tweeted this morning about how I have really bad imposter syndrome too. Like, I still sometimes feel like I'm faking ADHD. I think that's probably part of it. Being diagnosed by someone that was like, oh, so it sounds like you want to be diagnosed with ADHD. I'll diagnose you with ADHD. He wasn't like, oh, it sounds like you have this. You should take this questionnaire. And he did make me take a questionnaire and it was very obvious I did, but I don't know. It felt to me like he thought I was just drug seeking. He was like, so what do you want? What do you want for your medication? And I'm like, seriously, this is what it is? Okay, I guess I'll try Adderall because that's what everyone else tries. And then that turned into a whole like medication titration thing. And now I'm at a good dose and everything. But that was initially my diagnosis. So I was first diagnosed with generalized anxiety and then came back a few weeks later and then diagnosed with G. Because he didn't believe in it, he diagnosed me with inattentive type. But now knowing what I know about it, I know that I am combined, because while many women have or present inattentive sheer, I'm really impulsive and hyperactive, and it's too much of that for it to be just inattentive for me. So that's my diagnosis story.
Thank you so much for sharing your journey with me. It's just so sad for me that kids with ADHD oftentimes have situations that all the adults in their life are not seeing their strength and constantly telling them, like, you're not performing to whatever societal standards are, and nobody told us why those societal standards were there to begin with. And nobody got our buy-ins. It was just like, this is the good behavior. And if you don't do it this way, something is wrong with you. I think that's really hard for ADHD folks to accept, because we want to have a say in the decision-making. We want to question why the rules are there. We want to question, are they even good rules? Do we even agree to them? As children, like, we have very low power. So of course, nobody is getting our buy-ins. And yeah, sorry that it took you to go through a panic attack and psychologists don't believe ADHD for you to get the help you need.
I was also going to mention how as a kid growing up, I also got a lot of the but statements on my report cards. They would be like, Sydney is a pleasure to have in class, but she needs to work on her organization. Sydney has potential. That's like the biggest trigger statement for me. Oh, you have potential, reach your potential. But her behavior could improve and she could maybe reach her potentials. As I was a kid, there was always more work for me to do. And I never really understood like why I wasn't ever good enough as I was. I really are. Like that as a kid, I can articulate that now, but that's definitely how I was feeling. Like nothing I ever did was good enough for my teachers or my mother. As an adult now and as a parent now, I really try to stay aware of how I'm speaking to my own child now too, and to be a little more understanding of what he might be going through based on what I experienced when I was a kid.
Yeah, since you're talking about being a mother, I would love to learn more about how your intersectionality impact your ADHD experiences. Because I know you're a mother, I know you're Latina, and I know you have a certain long-term health conditions. So there are many layers to your experiences. So I would love for you to talk more about how you think those things combined together have impacted your ADHD experience.
Yeah, so from a societal perspective of being a minority and being a woman, I've been very fortunate in that I haven't experienced the sort of belittlement or discrimination in the ADHD spaces that I know a lot of minorities and women deal with. And I'm very aware of that privilege. And I try to leverage that to amplify their experiences and their voices as much as I can. And then if anything, I just want people like me, minorities, women, mothers. I also have hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, the connective tissue disorder that's very common in people with ADHD and autism. I just want people like me to see what I'm putting out there, want them to not feel alone. I want them to see that it is possible to do X, Y, and Z. Hey, it's okay that you had to drop out of college. It's okay that you don't have life figured out right now. This person doesn't either, and maybe she never will, talking about me, but you're not alone. There's other people like you, and we're all trying to figure this life out, and everything's going to be okay. I just want people to see themselves in me, basically. I want other people to relate to what I'm saying and feel like they have someone that's capable is there.
That's so beautiful as your vision. I felt like almost like a mission statement. And then that's something I definitely experienced of creating content in the community. Like I never really created much online before. And it was quite the new experience for me because I was very shocked about how friendly the community were. I really love the idea that people in this community a lot of times are intentionally amplifying each other's voices, especially the voices of people who historically and now have less voice and less power.
Definitely.
But take a little break from the show and talk about my ADHD coaching. So if you're interested in accomplishing more by doing less, building your ADHD resiliency, amplifying your strengths, as well as craft your own ADHD toolbox and narratives, I'm currently taking one-on-one coaching clients. So feel free to visit ADHDAsianGirl.com/coaching and book a free coaching introductory call with me. My background are in positive psychology, mindfulness, as well as lots of ADHD tried and true tools. I'm looking forward to working with you. Now let's turn back to the show. We talked about your long journey to finish your bachelor, and now I know that you are very awesome, like science geek woman. That's how I think about you for some reason. I'm like, she explained the brain and biology into simple English sentences, and I'm terrible at biology, so I really admire that. Tell me more about how did you discover the strength of yours of doing almost science communication, science translation, as well as I know you build really awesome Notion templates. That's really wonderful of organization skills, customization, probably programming, lots of different things. And you create awesome YouTube videos. Tell me more about how did you discover all these awesome strengths of yours?
First of all, thank you for the compliments. That's a huge motivator to keep doing it and not give up. So starting with the science communication stuff, my bachelor's is in biomedical science and chemistry. I think after I had my son, maybe it was when I was pregnant with him, I realized that I really like learning about science and what's going on in the body. And it helped me understand what was going on with him a little better, kind of ease my undiagnosed anxiety at the time. And I realized that I was good at explaining it, maybe not until grad school. So after I graduated my bachelor's, I immediately went into grad school that next spring semester. So I graduated in winter, then I went in January to grad school, and I became a TA, so a teaching assistant. I taught biology labs. And it was then, I think, when I realized that I have to explain these different types of bacteria and these anatomical structures. And when I realized that these college students were like, what is this? I'm like, how do I understand this? How can I explain this to someone else? And then as my son started getting older, so when I graduated from college, I think he was like 2.5. He's 8 now, but he started asking questions like all kids do. Like, why? Why is this? What is that? What does this mean? I'll just say, for example, why is the sky blue? It would be like, I don't know. Let's look it up. Like, we would look it up together. We want to learn it together. So we would learn things together. And then if it still didn't make sense to him, I would explain it in a way that he would understand. So then that coupled with like my teaching experience, I think, really started to solidify that I wanted to communicate these complicated things to other people, because I saw that when my son understands something, like I explained to him, this is how your brain is working right now, he takes things less personally. He can separate himself from what's going on if it has to do with him. And I'm like, oh, this is what's going on in your brain right now. It's trying to protect you from X, Y, Z. He doesn't react as strongly to things if he thought it was like all his fault or if he didn't understand what's going on. So just working with him and then working with other people who are trying to memorize things for a lab practical, that's where that came from. And then with ADHD, I was like, learning about ADHD is helping me understand it and helping me cope with things. Like 2 years ago from my own account, and I've always said self-awareness is like the best thing you can do for yourself. It's like, I want to explain ADHD to other people. I want them to understand why their brain is doing what they're doing, what's going on in their brain. But if you start talking about synapses and dopaminergic stuff, people are going to just, their eyes are going to glaze over, and they're not going to listen to anything you're saying. So I have to make it interesting and fun, because if my poor 5-year-old child can stay engaged with me when I'm explaining to him how his brain works, then I think I could probably do that with adults too. And that's like my goal with creating content. And then with Notion. So I actually used Notion for the first time at the last job that I had. I had never heard of it before, but it was this new thing. And like a lot of people with ADHD, new things are very exciting to me.
Yep. I'm like nodding really heavily.
Novelty. That's, oh my gosh, all the lights are going off. I want to learn this thing. And just like learning new things. I love to teach myself things that I never dabbled with before. And then like, again, with the YouTube video, like I didn't know what the heck I was doing with recording and like cutting videos and using Adobe and all that stuff. But like, I just mess around with it. And it really helps, like I said, or when I get compliments on it, because if I don't get compliments on something and I just feel like I'm good at something, then I'm like, maybe I should just give up. Yeah, I enjoy it, but it's not like paying me bills. No one's even noticed it. I don't know. If you're listening to this and you have ADHD or you don't have ADHD, and someone that does have ADHD, just compliment them on their new hobby that they're doing, that they were doing a really good job at. If you see skill in someone, it costs $0 and it takes 2 seconds to just say, this is awesome. You're doing great. It sounds cheesy, but that little bit of encouragement can make all the difference between someone continuing on and making their YouTube channel or just completely giving up. I gave up for a couple of years, and when I went back and I looked at people's comments on my videos, I'm like, wow, people actually do like me. There's some mean people out there. There's some haters. The people that are nice, the people that compliment, that take 2 seconds to comment, like, this helped me. That's really what keeps me going. I love learning new things and I love doing new things, but getting positive feedback is huge for me and probably a lot of people with ADHD, because there's that whole rejection sensitivity stuff that we deal with. Yeah, just trying all the things and doing all the things and getting compliments are definitely what keep me going with my strengths.
Yeah, there's just so many good threads you said there. And yes, I absolutely am all for amplifying each other's strength. That's why I'm creating this podcast. And yes, I totally agree with the connection, and people need to be in that positive environment. That's one of the strategies in ADHD 2.0. Dr. Holloway and another author wrote it. They're saying like it's very important for people to have that positive reinforcement, to be in a good environment, and then taking on the right challenges for themselves. But take a little break from the show and talk about my ADHD coaching. So if you're interested in accomplishing more by doing less, building your ADHD resiliency, amplifying your strengths, as well as craft your own ADHD toolbox and narratives, I'm currently taking one-on-one coaching clients, so feel free to visit ADHDAsianGirl.com/coaching and book a free coaching introductory call with me. My background are in positive psychology, mindfulness, as well as lots of ADHD tried and true tools. I'm looking forward to working with you. Now let's turn back to the show. And I think this is a perfect transition to my next question of creativity and ADHD, because I hear so many good threads already of ADHD people. Somehow we keep that inner child alive. We have that wonder of why things are this way, right? So we're curious. And then we always want to learn and do new things. And we're usually pretty good at teaching ourselves how to do the thing. And those combined together, I can see why ADHD really could contribute to creativity. So tell me more about your thoughts on ADHD and creativity.
Is it okay if I talk a little bit about the science of it?
Yes, absolutely. That's cool. Your strengths. Show your strength.
I did a lot of research on this topic. I made a video on it a couple months ago. So the default mode network, there are these things in our brains that are networks. A network is like a collection of different brain regions that are responsible for certain things. There are other ones, but for simplicity's sake, I'm just going to talk about two. So there's one that's called the task positive network. And then the other one is called the default mode network. So there's the TPN and the DMN. And the TPN is what is active. So imagine the part of your brain, if you just imagine it in two halves, it's not, but if you just imagine it in two halves, that task positive network, that side of the brain is going to light up when you're doing things like focusing on something boring, taxes, or writing an email, or cleaning something. Just when you're trying to focus on a task that doesn't really have to do with anything internal. It's when you're like organizing, when you're planning, when you're focusing, when you're learning. When the TPN is lit up, the default mode network, the DMN, is supposed to be dark. It's not supposed to be. And then when the DMN lights up, that's when the TPN goes dark, or it's supposed to. So the default mode network is active when you are, people use the term mind wandering a lot. This means when you're thinking about your past, when you're thinking about the future, when you're trying to come up with ideas, when you're remembering something, just like any internal thought that's not related to an external task. Like I said, normally they work opposite, but in ADHD brains, there have been lots of studies that actually show that people with ADHD have a harder time turning that default mode network off. So when their task positive network is lit up, their default mode network is also lit up. Maybe wow. Not to the full degree of just like full blown mind wander, but it's also lit up. They don't turn it off like they're quote unquote supposed to. So because of that, that's where that creativity comes from. Because when you are trying to generate ideas, you need your task positive network to like connect things and make sense of stuff and explain why they're connected. And then in this video, I also talk about like the associative horizon. So that's like how far your mind can stretch to grab ideas to connect them to each other. And so people with ADHD probably have a broader associative horizon. That's why I didn't work like I was counting the other day. I was like 1, 2, 3. And then in my brain, like the Hey Ya song by Outkast just started like playing in my brain, like 1, 2, 3, my favorite. I'm like, can you not do this right now? Like, it's ideas or concepts or memories or stimuli, like sensory stimuli that you just connect to each other. And like, the more narrow it is, the more focused you probably are, because you're not thinking about songs while you're trying to count something. But because I have that really active default mode network and a broad associative horizon, I'm going to find that Outkast lyric when I'm supposed to be over here working on something else, right? But that's exactly the whole idea of creativity, is coming up with ideas or solutions that are out of the box, out of that box of the narrow horizon or the type of box that only a task positive network might come up with. Maybe they're logical solutions. If you have that default mode network in action also, then you're probably connecting things that other people hadn't thought of before. And that's what I hear a lot of people achieve. They're out-of-the-box thinkers. They're creative thinkers. But then the problem with that becomes overwhelm. You can get overwhelmed with how many ideas you're having. you can get creative burnout because like you're way too creative for like a long time. And then it's, I have no ideas and I'm a bag of trash and I'm just going to sit on the couch because I can't think of anything creative at all. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Yeah, wow, I have so many ideas right now. Okay, one is that as a creative, I've heard about the book of The Artist's Way and that the idea of the morning page. In the morning, you get up and you write 3 pages of free writing. It's actually really good for my brain, ADHD brain, to do a brain dump. But I always end up maybe 2 weeks in getting super overwhelmed because at some point my brain, it must be the associative horizon or the default network, just keep going. And then great ideas coming to me when I'm supposed to focus on something else. At some point, it just gets too overwhelming and give up. Then I go back to that practice a couple months down the line. I never understood why that happened to me. And now I may have a better idea why that happened to me.
I like that idea, though. What did you say that was called? Like
the book is called The Artist's Way, and the practice is called Morning Pages. It's just essentially you get up in the morning, you free write for 3 pages of whatever you want to write. She claims that this helps you to spark ideas. You have creative ideas later on. It's not like you have to write about creativity. Just write anything. I love the practice, but I've entered overwhelmed through it many times.
So when you cycle between being really creative and going through creative burnout, that is actually a really good way to cope with that. That's just like a habit you probably just have to work on. For me, something that works, okay, I'm going to show you. Other people aren't going to be able to see it, but I have stacks on stacks of post-it notes and like they're actually spread all around my house too with pins. And then I also have an idea dump in my Notion page. When I get ideas, it could be anything. It could be like, oh, I have an idea for a Notion template. I have a content idea. I have something I want to do with the living room, with the shelf. I am starting to recognize when these ideas are coming, like I'm starting to pay attention to, okay, am I at a capacity right now or is right now a good time to even work on this idea? Because I used to have an idea and then I would just chase it. Like, I'm going on this task I'm supposed to be focusing on. Forget about it. And it's the important one. I'm focusing on this idea that I'm going to abandon later. So I've started writing them down on post-it notes and in my Notion page. And then I leave it. If I'm busy, I leave it. It's there. And if I want to come back to it and then kind of expand on it. If I don't, I have something in Notion where I'm like, nah, and then I just click it and then it hides it from all the other ideas that I have. So just, like I said, self-awareness, being aware of what you're doing and when you're doing it and if it's distracting you and writing things down, like your idea, you could do a whole session with it. It just really depends on what works best for you. Try out multiple ways.
I love the idea of parking some ideas in some place and then we can revisit. And I love the idea of doing a session with certain ideas. That's where I usually have previously struggled with, is I have all these Notion dumps too, but I never revisit them. Like I never go back to them.
Yeah, I sort it. So when I create the Notion thing, I should make a template like specifically for dumping your ideas for people. So I sort it by like most recently visited or most recently edited. So you can see what I have the most activity in. And then I just kind of scroll through them. I title them and then I look in them. Like they're not all going to be winners. It's an essential place where I can see all of them. You know?
Yeah. I love the idea of sorting and going through a central place of the ideas. We're coming up at time. Are there any last words of encouragement or any ideas you would like to share with the ADHD community?
I want other people to not be afraid of who they are, and not, when I say other people, I mean other people or autism and all the neurodivergent friends out there. You're different, but that's okay. That's what makes you. You have strengths, whether they were recognized in your past or not. They are there and you have value. And if you don't know what you're doing in life, same. It's okay. Like, we're going to make it. And you're not alone.
Love that. And if you want to learn why your ADHD brain is different, go watch Cindy's YouTube video and she will explain it for you. Thank you so much for being on the podcast.
Yeah, thank you so much for inviting me.
Thank you so much for listening to today's episode. If you enjoyed today's episode, please feel free to drop a comment and review on Apple Podcasts or Spotify Podcasts. or send me a DM on social media, or send me an email to adhdasiangirl@gmail.com. Sending lots of love to you, and have a good day.